The monsoon-like deluge, which was fast turning the battlefield into a sea of mud, was still falling as Arthur Jacko Patton snatched a few moments to write home. Just 3 days had passed since his first perilous advance into the cauldron of fire east of Ypres, and from a sodden tented camp, the Norfolk Company commander sought to reassure his mother that all was well. "Our little stunt is a thing of the past now," he scribbled on a postcard. "We'll write in a day or so. Don't worry to send any parcels for 6 weeks, as I'm going on a course in a week." The little stunt to which he so matter-of-factly referred was the launching of one of the greatest British offensive operations of the First World War, an all-out assault by around 100,000 men from 9 divisions, and far from being a thing of the past, it signalled the beginning of a 3.5-month campaign to drive the German army from the gentle ridges rising above the wet Flanders plain and a large part of Belgium beyond it. Designed to yield a major strategic victory, the dawn attack, which began amid pouring rain at 3:50 a.m. on July 31st, 1917, was fraught with danger and difficulty. None more so than in the advance north of the Menin Road towards the Geluweld Plateau, where Jacko Patton's company formed part of a force intended to exploit an anticipated early success that never came. The plan was for the 18th Eastern Division to leapfrog the spearhead units of the 30th Division and carry the advance towards the shell-splintered remains of Polygon Wood, a little over 3,000 yards from the British front line. But the attack went awry from the outset. Struggling across a shell-pocked wasteland of mud, barbed wire and devastated woodland, assailed by heavy shelling, the leading troops lost touch with the creeping barrage, veered off course and were cut down in droves by machine guns firing from undamaged pillboxes. The armoured force operating alongside them fared little better. Of the 48 tanks, only 19 made it as far as No Man's Land, and of these, all bar one was put out of action. The result was total confusion. Mistaking Chateau Wood for Glencorse Wood, their actual objective, the men of 30th Division erroneously signalled its capture, propelling the vanguard of 18th Division into a vortex of fire from positions they imagined had already been vanquished. By the time the 8th Norfolks started forward at 8:50 a.m., the two leading battalions, 8th Suffolks and 6th Royal Berkshires, were already being horribly shelled as they struggled through Sanctuary Wood. With the original plan shot to pieces, the decision was taken not to add to the slaughter. The message, sent shortly after 10 a.m, was in time to prevent 3 companies of the Norfolks moving into the killing zone, but too late to stop Arthur Patton's C Company out in front. Unaware what was happening in front or behind him, Patton stoically pushed on to reach the wrecked remains of the 1st German line, where he discovered that the division on his left was held up. Edging forward through intensifying fire, he left his 3 platoons in what little cover existed and scouted forward, only to find a scattering of men from his own and a neighbouring division in danger of being overwhelmed by an enemy counterattack. Patton rose to the occasion magnificently. Recognising the threat, he quickly brought some order to the chaos, bringing up his company and reorganising the fractured line just in time to beat off the advancing German troops. By the afternoon, his command had swollen to 200 men from a variety of splintered units who were occupying a necklace of shell holes and improvised strongpoints. Inspired by his example, they clung on with what one historian has called a grim determination in the face of a continuous bombardment, which was directed by low-flying enemy aircraft. During a day of setbacks and failure on the Gelvelt Plateau, Arthur Patton's gallant stand represented one of the few bright spots, but it came at a heavy cost. By the time his disparate force was finally relieved, C Company, 8th Norfolk's, had suffered more than 40 casualties, nearly half its strength. Around dawn on August 1st, the survivors were back where they started, dog-tired, soaked through to the skin, and no doubt thankful to be alive. It was a grim augury of much worse to come.